to build big coalitions, because whatever policy debates that Tom Hayden and Pat Buchanan want to have, they can't have them if we don't have democracy. And they recognize that, right? This is a real baseline thing. So, and we're at one of those moments again now. And I think that it's a really sort of hard time to be living in. But there is this silver lining that I think is actually quite true. And that is, you know, if we understand that this election of this year is about democracy, we can put aside policy debates that we really hope to have in the coming years. Right now, we have to defend democracy. And I think that's what they realized there in Seattle. And just to go back to your original question there too about WTO, you know, Trump weakened it largely, and Biden has weakened it for a lot of different reasons, not necessarily the Trumpian reasons, but for his own concerns about protecting American manufacturing and jobs and so forth. WTO did not like the sort of subsidies that the Biden administration provided for electric car manufacturers and so forth. So a lot of reasons why the WTO has remained weakened. But I think this push for elevating democracy is one of the main reasons, and that's one of the main issues confronting us right now.
D.W. Gibson has been our guest. He is the author of the book, One Week to Change the World, an oral history of the 1999 WTO protest. He's joined us to talk about this protest, which will mark its 25th anniversary this year. D.W. Gibson, I've enjoyed our conversation very much, and I thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's been a great conversation.
That does it for Letters and Politics. The show is produced by...
You're tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
We know a KBOO community membership is at the top of everyone's wish list this season. Give the gift of supporting grassroots community media by making a donation during KBOO's Catalog of Connections campaign now through December 31st. Our $75,000 goal will go towards everyone's favorite music, news, and public affairs programming all year long. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thank you and happy holidays.
What is climate change? How is it affecting our lives? And what can we do about it? We'll connect the dots from energy to extreme weather, public health, and more. I'm Dr. Anthony Leiserwitz. Join me for Climate Connections during the evening news, weekdays at 5 p.m. here on 90.7 KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 11 a.m. Next up is The Bike Show.
Welcome, hello, and welcome to the Bike Show. Nedra, are you there?
She's not. I can't get her.
Nedra, well, I guess my co-host is not on right now, so I'll take over for now. Good morning, and welcome to the Bike Show, broadcasting from the KBO Community Radio Station in Portland, Oregon. The show is heard on 90.7 FM. Streaming live on KBOO FM and carried by stations across the land and by Cornucopia Radio in the UK. Sending all of you crisp fall season greetings. We are glad you joined us today, and we hope you're well in this season of say what you mean what you say, as some people have said. KBOO is currently fundraising, so if you care about public radio and have the ability to give, please consider a donation to KBOO and help us stay on the air. We've been on the air 62 years or more, and we'd like to continue for another 62 years at least. So please consider giving. The Bike Show is co-hosted by Nedra Deadweiler and Alon Robb and engineered by Ty Walker. And I'm speaking to you from the KBO studio. Nedra, are you on? We're having a little trouble connecting with my co-host, so I will move on, and hopefully, Nedra, you could join us soon. We often start the show with some news from the vast bicycle universe, and today we have some news from Switzerland, Scotland, and China. A majority of Swiss voters rejected a government plan to extend key stretches of the motorway network. The project, with an estimated cost of over $5 billion, would have involved widening or building new roads at six key points on the country's motorway system, especially near Bern, the capital, and on a busy stretch between Geneva and Lausanne. The arguments of environmental groups and parties on the left, who criticize the monetary and environmental costs and the plan's effectiveness in reducing traffic congestion, carried the day. For those of us in Portland and across the land who are opposed to such billion-dollar expansions of freeways, this news item from Switzerland gives hope. The next news item might not be of great surprise to anyone who has ever hopped on a bicycle, but in an extensive study conducted by Scottish doctors and scientists, they have found that, quote, active commuters were less likely to suffer from a range of negative physical and mental health outcomes than non-active commuters. This Scottish study is based on census data from which the researchers selected 82,297 individuals aged 16 to 74. They were followed up between 2001 and 2018. Through linkages to hospitalization, death, prescription records. Proportional hazard models were used to compare cyclists and pedestrian commuters with non-active commuters for a range of health outcomes, and they control for pre-existing health conditions and demographics. Compared with non-active commuting, cyclists and pedestrian commuting was associated with lower all-cause mortality risk, hospitalization, cardiovascular illnesses, cancer, and psychiatric drugs. And in a story from China, over 100,000 Chinese students joined a 50-kilometer nighttime bike ride in search of good soup dumplings. The trend started with four riders to Kaifeng in search of the city's famous oversized soup dumplings. The rides have grown to a reported 100,000 people jamming major roads, overwhelming a small tourist town, and drawing the attention of authorities. People sang together and cheered for each other while climbing uphill together, Li Lulu, a student at Henan University, told China Daily. I could feel the passion of the young people, and it was much more than a bike ride. On following nights, police blocked roads and threatened arrests at universities also banned bikes. Students, however, vowed to return. And those are some news items from the bicycle universe. Nedra, are you on the line? Or?
No.
Okay, maybe at the half-hour mark. Our first guest today is in Buenos Aires, artist and cyclist Paula Andrea Gavirera Silguero, and I apologize if I misspelled your name, better known by her pen name Power Paola. She was born in Ecuador and in her teens moved to Colombia. She is a co-founder of the international comics collective Chicks on Comics and author of graphic books including Virus Tropical and All My Bicycle. Her work centers on identity, family, feminism, sexuality, bicycles, and much more. Good day, Power Paola, and welcome to the show. Can you hear me? We're talking on Zoom to Argentina, so might take a while, but bear with us, please. Hope our first guest... Hello!
Hi.
Now I can hear you. Welcome to the show. And you're all in white. For those of our listeners, I'm speaking with Paro Paola on Zoom, and you're all in white today. It's interesting. And we're here in our studio. So thank you so much for being on the show. How are things with you today?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Yeah,
I'm very happy. Here in Buenos Aires, it's springtime here.
Ah, and here it's winter, but today was a bright day and I rode my bike. I live in Northwest Portland and traveled to the studio, and it was I always go over the bridge, over the Willamette. You've traveled quite a lot in the world, lived in various cities. Have you ever been to Portland?
No, never. I would love to go there one day, but no.
Well, you have an invitation to visit and even a place to stay if you need. My Rachel and our four-legged family members would be happy to host you. So before we get to bicycles, and I really I loved your book, All My Bicycles. It's a beautifully drawn book and with a lot of emotion and feeling and wisdom. But before we get to bicycles, your first graphic novel, Virus Tropical, is about your birth and childhood. Can you tell us a little bit about those early years?
Yes, for sure. When I started doing comics, I wanted to tell the story of an immigrant, middle-class family in Colombia and in Ecuador, and trying to make a story. That's the beginning of the it. But the start of the the point of the start of the graphic novel is my conception until my 18 years old. So I tried to put the context in Colombia, the context in Quito, Ecuador, the context of a family in the 90s and 80s in these countries. And we don't have too much information, like in a graphic style, to tell that moment. So it is fun to try to research all of these images of the fashion, the way of being there in the 80s and 90s, like a common family of immigrants. So I wanted to tell that story.
And your conception was not like Jesus, as dramatic as Jesus Christ, but it was still interesting and gave the title to the book. Can you tell us about that conception? Yeah.
Yeah, I make fun of a lot of things of this tradition of literature here in Latin America, of the magic realism. That it's like a mix of drama and soap opera and and the stories of here that are in sometimes are true and very funny. And when my mother and my father started to live in Ecuador as an immigrant, my mother decided to have no more children. And I have two older sisters. So my mother made this surgery. The name of it's like, I don't remember how to say it in English.
Tying the tubes, maybe.
Tying the tubes, right. Thank you. And the doctor said that it's impossible that she was pregnant. And she went to different doctors, and the doctor said that she was possessed, that it is a tropical virus. So that is the story that I remember. But it told me how I born. So I have a very great title for story.
Well, I'm happy that the tying of the tubes didn't work too well and you're here with us today. And also, you know, a few places I read about you, it said that it wasn't clear. At one point it said your dad was a priest, then it said it was a defrocked priest, your mom, it said, was a mystic or a psychic who read in dominoes. So is that myth or is that, what's the real story here?
It's real. My father was a priest before he met my mother. And then he quit. He was an old man. This year, I think he will be 100 years.
Wow. Happy birthday.
Exactly. And my mother is a psychic. So I have the great characters to make the story. So that's why I have these great characters and this beginning that was like a very good start to mix all of the realities in Latin America that we have, like the Catholic presence very strong, and at the same time we have these beliefs of indigenous people people from Africa as well. So we have all of this mixture of cultures. So it was nice to have it in my house as well.
And I hope your mother is a better psychic than a psychic I met just before the election in the U.S. who predicted that the orange-haired demon will be defeated. So that psychic was unfortunately wrong. Let's get to bicycles. All My Bicycles is dedicated to your mother, who gave you your first bicycle, even though before that, I think you were riding your sister's bicycle. So tell us a little bit about that first bike that your mom got you.
It was incredible because she gave me like a very strong and powerful bicycle that was in a BMX. And we are close from the like a big park in Quito, Ecuador, that the name is La Carolina. And it's a very like big, big, big park, beautiful with all trees and very nice. And they have like this place to ride this kind of bicycles. And I feel like she gave me the independence in a way as a gift. This kind of bicycle, like, it gave me a lot of power to have it.
Your dad also had 100, but your mom, are they also cyclists, or did they ride bicycles before? And when they were younger?
She never learned how to ride a bicycle. That's why I said thanks to my mother to give me that she didn't have.
And the book is comprised of different chapters with different stories, relationships. How much is based on, you know, fact? How much is imagination? I was thinking of that when I read about a boyfriend who ended the relationship because he said he could not be with a Gemini. Is the book mostly okay? And what is his astrological sign, by the way?
It's a mix of things. I used of course the autobiographic, but at the same time I wanted to be more surrealist, so I mixed with some images that maybe I want to show more emotions and more and other kind of thinking, and that are part of the story as well. I went to the past, but at the same time, I'm drawing sometimes in the present moment. So it was a challenge to make that kind of book it was like a take my bike and said, okay, I'm going to be lost. Mm-hmm. I want to be lost, and I want to go around the city and to anywhere. And that is the spirit of the book, like, follow these stories, this memory, but at the same time, live the moments of when I was like lost, like show the moments of this kind of literature that is like in the present moment, but at the same time you wanted to go to the past and tell a real story.
And as a reader, I could tell you that you conveyed all those things very well. It really moved me and affected me. And I saw the trailer of the movie that was made from Virus Tropical. I haven't seen the movie yet, but you really convey that well. You're listening to the KBO Radio Bite Show, carried on KBO.fm and on different stations across the land, in Cornucopia Radio in the UK. And we're speaking today with Power Paola, who's an artist and cyclist, author of All My Bicycles and many other novels, and also a film. And she's speaking to us from Buenos Aires, Argentina. What is it like to cycle in Argentina? I know Colombia is where you lived in your teens, is a great bicycle country, and in a few months we'll talk to somebody from Colombia. But what is Argentina like to ride a bike? Do you feel safe? Are there a lot of people riding?
Yes, for example, all of the city have this route for the bikes. I feel very safe in Buenos Aires with my bicycle. I go everywhere at any time, and as a woman, it's like very difficult to live like that in another country in Latin America. Of course, some things happen sometimes, but it's not like I'm not afraid. I don't feel the violence in the night, or at least in the places where I move. Mm-hmm. I feel like very safe to drive my bicycle, and it's flat, the city, so it's very easy to go. And I live far away from everywhere, so it's all, when I take my bike to visit my friend, it's like 1 hour in the bike. And I love that. And I love to take that time and go around the city and get lost. I know very well Buenos Aires more than the people from here, thanks to my bicycle.
And are there many women who ride bicycles in Buenos Aires, or is it a little less than men? Okay, maybe I'll repeat my question. Are many women?
I didn't listen well.
So there were many women also ride the bicycle in Buenos Aires?
Yes, many women, yeah. Yes, and more now that everything is expensive. So, and after the pandemic, I feel like more people are riding the bicycle.
And your country also over there has a wonderful demagogue for a leader these days, if I'm not mistaken. So the cover of the book shows a young person riding uphill in a tropical forest, and then the next page shows a road barrier with a manhole where you could fall into. And I like that. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but to me it symbolized kind of freedom, adventure, and then the dangers of life. And you also have a quote in the book by a Vietnamese-American poet, Ocean Vuong, because freedom, I'm told, is nothing but the distance between the hunter and its prey. What does that sentence mean to you?
Yes, this world sometimes is a place where everybody wants to conquer other, right? And it's a question. It's not like I have the answer of that. But because you see that in the nature as well, like every living being want to live, and sometimes is against to the other. So it's a question, like in love as well. No, sometimes you feel possessed by somebody. It's like a philosophical question. Mm-hmm.
Luckily, there are also many people who help each other, who create, and I would recommend this book. I don't know if it's translated into Spanish, The Dawn of Everything, written by two anthropologists, David Rengro and David Greber, who are socialists, anarchists, communists, whatever, but they write about the history of humanity and focus on all the times in history where people worked together, societies which were not patriarchal, societies where people cooperated. So that's kind of a good medicine to anytime you open the paper and want to scream when you read what's happening. I'm curious about your artistic process. I mean, you know, where, how does it work for you? Do you have a, are you one of those people that sit down at the desk every day at a certain time, or you find inspiration from the gods and goddesses? How does it work for you?
It's very difficult to live by, to make comics and living by that. So I'm an illustrator. Sometimes I make workshops. I travel a lot with that, with my workshops and talks. So it's not easy to have this discipline of every day sitting in my table. But sometimes I have this time and I try to put all of this energy there. And sometimes I put the energy in another project. So I have like a lot of projects at the same time, like little Tamagotchis that I feed each one when I have the moment, the time, the... Sometimes I travel with my work as well, and I work very well in waiting rooms and airplanes. So I try to use that project that fits in the moment as well. Mm-hmm. It's a creative life.
And on your website, there's a nice 5-minute video of drawings you did in coffee shops, as a person who loves sitting in coffee shops and find them very creative places for me. What are some of the coffee shops or people you might, you know, that stand out in all the many hours you spend in coffee shops?
I love the old coffee shops. Mm-hmm. Maybe the coffee's not so good, but I love the people that go there that are more part of the culture, that I like all people that go every day with the newspaper and read it there for like all the week. You see the same person in the same table, and the owners know him, and they know the people from there, and the locals. And I love that kind of places. I try to find everywhere, and I feel like it's not very easy to find them nowadays, that all of these specialty coffee shops that are more, I don't know, hipster or more,
and also many corporate ones.
Another kind of, is more faster. It's not a place to be.
And many coffee shops now are part of chains where everywhere is the same. Yeah, I like you. I like quirky little funky coffee shops. There are a few in Portland. And growing up, I grew up in Jerusalem, so over there, there are a lot of coffee shops from, you know, the 1920s, both Arab and Jewish. Our time is just flying by, so I'd like to ask you, since I'm a lover of football, and you live in a country with good football and excellent players, I play every week, I've written books about the game, so I meant you have a little part about drawings about footballers and their haircuts. Any players that stand out? I mean, I could think of Valderrama, of course, of Colombia. Any players that you like their haircuts or think they shouldn't be leaving the house with that silly haircut they have? Any?
I love the possibilities of the hair. It's like a drawing as well. So I'm not very fan of football. Tell you about that, but I love haircuts and I love the drawings that the people can make in the heads.
What is next for you? What do you plan? Where might we find you in 10-15 years from now? And a few more movies maybe based on your books, or
in this moment is impossible to me to think about future. Really, it's like I'm trying to do the thing day by day, little by little. And nowadays I want to finish another book, so I'm in the beginning, middle of the process, so I want to put my energy in that and like stay in my cave drawing and writing for a while. That is the only thing that I know for these days. But in the future, like 15 days away is too much for me.
So you don't sit with your mother and say, "Mother, you're a psychic. Please tell me, you know, what's going to happen." It's more being open to the world and seeing what happens. And you know, the end
But my mom is more a psychic of the present.
At the end of your book, All My Bicycles, there's an image of a plant, a small tree growing out of a manhole, a hole in the ground. And I like that image as a symbol of hope, that out of the cement, you know, plants take root and bring us life. So I thank you so much for being on the show and wish you all the best. And if you ever make it to town, my family and I would be happy to ride with you on a bike and host you if you wish. So the invitation doesn't have any expiration date. So all the best to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and if people if people want to find out more about your work, where can they go on the web?
Power Paola altogether in Instagram or Twitter.
Okay.
X now.
X, yes. Twitter, Musk, billionaire, whatever you call it now, the man who rules the world. All right. Thank you so much.
Going now from that place too. So.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin our day thinking about that.
Sorry.
No, I don't want to mention the people who own Twitter or X or whatever.
Yeah.
So, all right. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. And I wish you well with your cycling and, of course, with your artistic creation. Take care. We've been speaking with artist and cyclist Power Paola, who was born in Ecuador. Moved in her teens with her family. Her dad was an ex-priest. Her mom was a psychic, to Colombia. She's the co-founder of the International Comics Collective, Chicks on Comics, and author of graphic books, which are available at bookstores in Portland and also some at the library. And her work, which centers on identity, family, feminism, sexuality, and more, could be found on powerpaola.blogspot.com. You're listening to the KBO Bike Show. We'll take a short break. And in the second half of the show, co-host Nedra Deadweiler will speak with Michelle Dunbar of Aztec Cycles, who she owns. That Michelle owns that company with her husband, Chris. She will talk about the work over there of the shop, which is located in Stone Mountain, Georgia, and the alternative ways they have built ownership and encouraged other business owners. So stay tuned. Maybe she could call us, no?
Make my way through the night to the so-called Jubilee.
So I might as well play this entire song. I'll email her too. So she could call the studio.
I'm falling under. I've had enough.
Hello and welcome back to the KBO Bike Show, coming to you from Portland, Oregon on 90.7 FM and streaming live on KBO.FM. And the show is carried by other stations across the land and Cornucopia Radio in the UK. This month is Pledge Drive here at KBOO, so if you can, please consider contributing to public radio. The station has been going strong for 62 years or more, and we'd like to continue with that tradition. In the first half of the show, I spoke with artist and cyclist Paro Paola in Buenos Aires, and in the second half of the show, we'll speak with Michelle Dunbar of Aztec Bicycles in Stone Mountain, Georgia. Are you on the line, Michelle? Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show. And Nedra was about to interview you, but I'm not sure what happened, so you'll be speaking to me today. Before we get to bicycles, Stone Mountain, I have to admit that it's a mystery to me. Can you tell us a little bit about where you are right now?
Stone Mountain is a historical town in Georgia where we have the largest granite mountain, if I'm not mistaken, in the world. It is a tourist attraction. It is a small town. It's very quaint, and we love being there.
And are you originally from Georgia? Is that where you grew up?
No, I am from London, England.
I was going to say your accent does not sound like a Georgia accent to me, but and I'm saying that as a person who also has an accent, so I guess we all have accents. Where in London are you from?
I'm from West London, Ealing, to be exact.
And what brought you to Georgia?
Mainly family when I finished school.
I know so many people that after the current election, including me, wish that they had an EU citizenship so we could go to a place where social services are not threatened and all those things. But I won't get into that. So tell us a little bit. You're the co-owner with your husband of Aztec Cycles. Tell us a little bit about the shop, what you do, what distinguishes it, perhaps.
So we've been in business since 2009. We've been in a brick-and-mortar store since 2010. We moved into Stone Mountain in 2000 and the later half of 2010 into 2011. We are a local bicycle shop that is community driven. We service any and every type of bicycle that you could think of. We do focus a lot on service, and we love what we do.
And you said it's a tourist town also, so a lot of tourists rent bikes, or is it mostly local people, students?
It's actually a good variety of all walks of life that come and rent our bicycles. We're located outside of the Stone Mountain Park, which is where that mountain is located. We do get a good variety of tourists as well as locals.
And how did you make the decision to have a bike shop? What kind of work were you doing before?
So I was in the corporate world before I came into the bicycle business. My husband is the one that has been working with and on bicycles at a very tender young age, and it's his passion, has always been his passion. So when he and I met back in 2008, he expressed the desire to open up his own shop, and I told him, well, I have the knowledge to help you do that. And so we kind of got together and put that in motion. And at the time, we were not married, of course. And I helped him get the shop open.
And when you laughed at the beginning of your answer, I had a strong feeling that you're going to say the corporate world. So I'm glad you moved from that world. Do you ever miss the corporate world, the power suits,
no.
The power lunches?
No.
You prefer the mechanic's outfit and the grease on your hands, huh?
Well, I don't get the grease on my hands, but yes, I do love the mechanics.
You know, looking at your website, I liked what your husband said about, and I'll quote, I had someone call me an artist the other day. At first I was dumbfounded, but really this is my art. Every bike is unique. Were you always a cyclist? Did you ride a bike when you were growing up in London?
Actually, I did. While I was in school, in high school in London, I took a what they call a cycling proficiency course, which was a course that extended over the period of 6 weeks, learning how to navigate in and out and around traffic, knowing what the traffic laws were in England, and rode my bike to and from school quite a few times.
And so you've cycled pretty much your entire life, even when you were working in the corporate world?
No. So I stopped cycling when I moved over here to the United States. I was 19 when I moved over here. I think I stopped cycling maybe when I was like 14 or 15. Of course, teenage years, you get involved in other things. And did not pick back up cycling until I met my now husband back in 2008.
Ah. And what is it like to ride in your town? Are there enough bicycle lanes? Does the city or town put some of its resources into bicycles?
Yes, and it's not that they, well, we don't have enough right now, but we are doing infrastructure. The city is working on infrastructure to bring more cyclists and pedestrians into our town, and safely, rather.
Hmm. And what are some, you mentioned you service and sell different kinds of bicycles. What are some of the bicycles that you have over there in the shop or could get for people?
We have tandems, comfort hybrids, road bikes, e-bikes, which are now becoming way more popular. We've serviced and sold unicycles, BMX bikes, kids bikes. We teach kids how to ride. We teach adults how to ride. Any pretty much anything to do with cycling, we've pretty much done it. My husband is, he loves doing customizations. He likes doing modifications, any kind of upgrades. That's it.
And as far as e-bikes, is he able to repair them, or is it? I assume it requires special training to deal with their mechanism.
Yes, we are able to repair them, and they've learned through learning the dealers, makeup of those bikes. We get a lot of tech knowledge from the manufacturers, which is really good.
Ah. And you mentioned, you take kids, bring people together. What are some of the rides you take? I'm looking right now on your website and the event calendar, the ride calendar. So where have you gone with kids and with adult cyclists?
Well, I definitely teach kids and adults how to ride. I've actually mostly been teaching adults. For the last few years, a lot of women, mostly women too, who have this bucket list of when they retire, they want to learn how to ride a bike because they were never able to when they were younger. So that's one of the things I love about cycling, is teaching new riders how to ride. As far as our events go, we've done and we go to a lot of other cycling group events in Atlanta. We support a lot of different bicycle clubs. We've hosted a few of our own rides. We've got a ride that we're bringing back next year called BYOB, which means bring your own bike. We have an organization we're getting ready to work on this coming year called LITS, which means Ladies Into Pedaling Successfully, which is for the average woman who doesn't want to race, who doesn't want to get out there and be like a racer or a fast rider, but who just wants to get out and ride a bike maybe 10 miles, maybe 8 miles, and just enjoy the outdoors.
Hmm. And when adults, you know, come and want to ride a bike, what is the oldest person who, you know, came to you wanting to learn how to ride? Was it somebody in their 70s or 80s even, or...?
It was in their they were in their 70s, yes.
And what are the main, you know, obstacles that people face before they decide to ride a bike? Is it that they had a bad experience with a bicycle, or they don't feel comfortable with? I mean, what are the, you know, psychic barriers?
The psychic barriers. Well, so a lot of the ladies that I teach how to ride bicycles have had. Most of them had a bad experience when they were younger, like falling off the bike. Their brother pushed them to help them balance and then let go of the bike, and of course they fell. So they've had those types of experiences. And then some of them just have the desire to want to ride a bicycle because their grandchildren are riding, their children are riding. And so that's why they come to me. The biggest fear for them is balancing. And once they overcome that fear, then they start to understand how cycling is.
Hmm. We are speaking with Michelle Dunbar of Aztec Cycles, which she owns with her husband Chris in Stone Mountain, Georgia, and we're speaking about her bike shop and her many other activities connected with cycling, mm-hmm. like teaching people how to ride. Is there a gender element in the reason why people don't learn bike, didn't learn to ride a bike earlier, or?
I do get some kids who are boys who want to learn how to ride, who for some reason have either shied away from it or haven't, you know, expressed the willingness of wanting to ride. But for the most part, it's girls, it's older women, women who have change jobs and now can work from home, and so they're a little bit more accessible to be able to come to the park and ride.
It's an interesting dynamic when, you know, an older person decides to do a physical activity. I played a lot of football in my youth, and then I haven't played for about 20, 30 years. And recently I started playing again every week, mm-hmm. A great pickup game in my neighborhood. And I'm about 30, 40 years older than everyone. So, you know, the knowledge of the game that I have, the love of the game, the knowledge of tactics is helpful, but it comes in conflict with my legs and my lungs. But I make up for it with, you know, being ferocious on the field and putting my heart and soul into it. So I really welcome when people could, you know, at any age decide to get back to something they loved or something they wanted to do all their life. So you're doing a really good, you know, wonderful service by helping them. You're also involved in your community, the cycling community. I believe you're on the Georgia Bikes Coalition.
Yes.
And what?
I'm on the
board. And yeah. What is that? Tell us a little bit, please, about that organization.
So Georgia Bikes, we're now called, we've revamped our name, and we're now called Go Georgia.
Uh-huh.
We are now a inclusive, multimodal transportation organization that works on infrastructure within our state for people to be able to move around easier and can get to different places.
Hmm. And are you, as a response, let's say, for your organization from the Georgia, you know, city councils or the legislature, are you making inroads with them?
Yes. Georgia is probably, I'd say, now catching up in terms of trying to make sure that their citizens can transport themselves from one place to another safely and securely. And so there are efforts all over from state to county to city government who are taking steps to make sure that our infrastructure gets put in place pretty soon.
Hmm. It's an interesting, you know, here in Portland, Oregon, we're known as a bicycle city, but there's actually been in the last 10 years a decline in ridership. And just in the last year or two, there's been a little growth. And I'm on the city's bicycle advisory committee. And, you know, we have a group both in the committee and in the community, so many wonderful, dedicated people. But sometimes we come across, you know, politicians or public servants who don't put bicycles at the front of their agenda. So the work is cut out for us, and I assume it's the same in Georgia also for you and your colleagues. What are some
of... We're quite fortunate. We're quite fortunate that a lot of our political leaders here in our state and our city and county are avid riders themselves. Our mayor, Andre Dickens, is a rider. One of our representatives, Raphael Warnock, is an avid rider. So we have quite a few people in place that are helping the efforts of the infrastructure to be put in place. They're helping with those efforts, most definitely.
That's good to hear. I like hearing positive stories like that. And in Portland also, there's, you know, we had an election, a new mayor, some city council members who ride their bikes regularly and care about cycling and cycling safety. So hopefully we'll be on the upswing again. When you don't ride a bicycle, what else do you like to do, if I may ask? If you have time?
If I have time. So currently, my time is very limited because we not only have the shop in Stone Mountain, we have a bicycle shop in the historic West End of the city of Atlanta. And we're also getting ready to open up a rental shipping container on the infamous Atlanta Beltline.
And infamous, explain what you mean by infamous.
So the Atlanta Beltline is a project that has been going on for quite some years now, and it's due to be finished, I believe, in 2029, where they are building cycling and pedestrian paths around the city of Atlanta that connects to other bicycle pedestrian trails around the city. So it's the biggest of its nature in the country. And so we had an opportunity to purchase a shipping container and put it on a piece of property right where the Beltline is in order to rent bicycles to the Beltline.
Sounds like a wonderful project. I hope it goes well. And Atlanta itself, would you say, is a good place to ride? What do you think of Atlanta compared to London, for example, for as far as cycling?
Yes, it's getting to be a lot better to ride. The streets are in lot because of advocacy groups such as Propel Atlanta. A lot of our streets are now becoming a lot more safer for cyclists. You can navigate yourself through on streets if you're comfortable doing that, or if you pick a trail that's not too far from you, you could take your bike and ride on the trail. Being that I am from London, I am a consummate rider. I can ride in traffic and navigate with cars and traffic lights and all of that, so I don't have that fear. And when my husband and I have time, we love to go and ride, although our time is kind of limited.
I can imagine. It seems like you're busy. You know, you need 25 hours a day at least.
Right. Yes, but you asked me what I like to do in my spare time. Yeah. I like to bake, and I like to spend time with my family.
That's good. And it's good also that, I've never met you, but just hearing you and, you know, looking at your website, seems like you do what you love, and that's so important, you know, and you're doing good work in the world, which is also very important.
Thank you.
So I like to ask people, actually, towards the end, what, you know, maybe how do you see yourself and your your business, your in 10, 15 years, do you see yourself still involved with bicycles and teaching more and leading more classes for people who've never rode bicycles before?
I am a cycling instructor through the NBDA, but what I see ourselves doing in 10 to 15 years is being able to travel and see bicycle trails all over the country and eventually internationally. We love it. We love it. We just got into, well, let me just say this. Back in August, we purchased our building in Stone Mountain. So we now have secured a permanent bicycle shop location for where we are. A bicycle shop will always be there. And we are putting steps in place to make sure that that happens. With our other shop, I mean, we'll see the growth of the rental container. I'm very excited to see. I know that it will grow to be very successful, and people will be able to rent bikes and ride all over the Beltline through us within the next 5 years, avidly so.
Amen, amen. And so no return to the corporate world, I hope.
No, not at all.
Good. Well, I thank you very much for your time and for being a guest on the show, and all the best to you and to your husband, Chris. And it's so inspiring to hear individuals like you who live all over, not just in Portland, Oregon or London, and do amazing work in this world. So thank you so much. Ride safely.
Thank you very much for having me on the show. I appreciate that. And you continue to ride and play football.
Okay. Thank you very much. All the best. We've been speaking with Michelle Dunbar of Aztec Cycles, which is in Stone Mountain, Georgia. She owns a bicycle shop there and also in Atlanta with her husband, Chris, and does a lot of good work in the world teaching people who never rode a bike before or maybe rode bikes when they were kids and something happened. They stopped riding. She has classes to teach and lead rides to instill confidence and cycling ability. So that was our second guest today. And our time is almost up here. And again, I'd like to remind our listeners in Portland and elsewhere that we're here at KBOO in the midst of a pledge drive. We have those periodically. And since the station is community-based, community-owned, we don't have a billionaire from hell with endless money rolling our operations. It truly is a community effort of love. And the station has been around since at least 1968. We go 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Many of our shows are also carried by other stations like this bike show here. So please consider donating. And thank you, as always, for being, for listening to the show. The show is co-hosted by Nedra Deadweiler and myself, Alon Rob. Our engineer is Ty Walker. Thank you, Ty, for being there behind the boards and doing a fantastic job. I'd like to thank our guests, Power Paola, who's an artist and cyclist in Argentina, and Michelle Dunbar in Stone Mountain, Georgia, for being our guest and for your good work on behalf of cycling and life. And thank you to our listeners, as always. We couldn't do this without you. So all the best to all of you. Ride safe.
Thank you, Ty. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is noon.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.